Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hi there, folks. Welcome to another Political Chat. I'm joined by Dan, and today we're going to be talking about Andy Burnham, his relationship to the Labour Party, and the Labour Party's relationship to the North, and why all the pollsters were like, oh yeah, Andy Burnham will win, but he'll win on about 45%, and Reform will be like on 43%.
He'll scrape it if he's lucky.
And Restore Britain will split the vote.
Yeah,
I mean, literally, we covered on the podcast earlier, Luke Trill being like, yeah, well, Restore Britain's the evil right-wing party going to hand it to Andy Burnham. Not even slightly.
No.
Andy Burnham crushed everyone.
You could have added up Reform, Restore,
every other
Conservatives,
party.
I mean, every Liberal Democrats,
party.
Why not? Even the Greens.
Yeah, add them all together and Burnham still beat them all.
Yes.
How? How did he still beat them all?
Well, it helps that he was running a constituency that has voted Labour for 120 years.
Yeah, but
well, at least the area has.
But the margin was really something special.
It was, yeah.
Because in the previous elections, it was still like 45% Labour, which implies, well, there's a good chunk of people out there who weren't going to vote Labour. Now, Andy Burnham got the absolute majority.
Even compare it to the local elections, which were only 6 weeks ago, maybe seven.
They lost everything.
Yeah, I mean, Reform absolutely dominated the local elections. So you could understand why everybody thought it was going to be a tight race.
Yes, completely.
All the professional pollsters, yep. Presumably even Andy himself to an extent.
Yeah, I imagine he did. I mean, he even said as he was campaigning, "We're not taking this for granted." Right, and he went, and we're going to go through some of his campaign today. He went and ran quite an aggressive campaign along a particular narrative. And actually, I'd like to contrast it with Rupert Lowe's wins in Great Yarmouth. Because what happened was the turnout was 6 points higher than at the general election, which is unusual for a by-election.
Very unusual.
By-elections, usually much worse turnout because people are like, who cares? Because by-elections aren't usually decisive. Right, they don't usually change anything. They don't usually decide anything.
This one did.
This one,
well, at least it will.
It's kind of exciting, right?
Yes.
And we can compare that to Rupert Lowe's wins in Great Yarmouth, right? Mm. So everywhere he stood, it was at least, I think it was 45%, 44% of the vote, which you could have halved all of their vote share, Restore's vote share, in Great Yarmouth, and they still would have won every single seat that they were competing for. But the turnout was higher, and in some places they won, again, absolute majorities. Why? Well, it's on the strength of the narrative. Rupert Lowe said, no, we're going to put Great Yarmouth first. We're going to do the right thing for us in this constituency, regardless of what the rest of the country thinks, regardless of what anyone else thinks. This is a sort of hero's journey narrative. It's like, he's our guy. He's helped us out, and he's been rock solid. He donates his salary to charity. He actually helps people in the constituency.
Yes.
I want more of that.
I mean, even Andy Burnham apparently donates 15% of his salary. I mean, not the 100% that Rupert Lowe does,
but in Andy Burnham's defence, he's probably not wealthy like Rupert Lowe is. You know, he's been a professional politician his whole life.
Yes.
And I don't know whether he's got Hillary Clinton's stock market instincts.
No, the bungs normally come after they leave office. They're not normally blunt enough to do it while they're still in.
So in Andy Burnham's defence, okay, that's still pretty good. Like, donating 15% of your salary to local charities. And he is from the area. Like, this was an eternal advantage.
I mean, there was a very strong message that he could put out, which he didn't even put out. He didn't implicitly say this, but a vote for anybody else, you know, whether it's Reform or Restore or whoever came forth, I can't remember now who came forth, maybe the Greens, I don't know. Anyway.
I don't know. There's such a large gap between the three competing parties.
Yes. But a vote for any of them is essentially a vote to remove Keir Starmer.
Yes.
But slowly. A vote for Andy Burnham is a vote to remove Keir Starmer very, very quickly.
Yes.
And to be fair, that is quite a strong message.
A very strong message.
Yes.
In fact, it was the message that Reform were campaigning on only 6 weeks before.
Where they won a majority.
Yeah. So anyway, I found this very interesting, right? And so Burnham has a fairly recognisable caricature here. This originally as a meme that was made of Andy Burnham in 2020 when he learned that the Conservative government was cutting financial support to Manchester and putting Manchester in a stricter lockdown. And these memes were apparently immortalized all over social media as he was attacking Westminster.
Did you ever have a Nintendo Wii? Because they had little Mii characters.
I didn't have one, but I'm aware that that's what it looks like.
It looks like somebody from the Kim Jong-un family has been loaded onto a Nintendo profile.
Yeah, I don't know why he's not smiling, because he's actually quite a cheery chappy.
Yes.
He's not like this sort of super serious
guy. If it's a meme, it's presumably of that famous bit where we found out that Manchester was having some COVID restrictions or something like that.
Presumably it's going to be something like that. But I found this interesting, because Vote Andy for Us has a kind of... I mean, it, for me as an outsider, it has this kind of... It reads for the Labour Party.
Yes. That is exactly what I was going to say.
Not for the people of Manchester. But... again, I think we in the South have different relationships to our political parties than they do in the North with Labour.
I think we do now. But what
maybe 50 years ago we didn't.
Maybe not even that long ago. Because what Andy Burnham has done, it kind of reminds me of the shift from Theresa May to Boris Johnson. So the South would have largely considered the Conservative Party their party.
Yeah.
And Theresa May, she was this very managerial but soulless figure. You know, she's very much by the rules. She was kind of a female Tory version.
Playing through the wheat fields didn't win you over.
Yeah. But she had this kind of whole procedure. She was very much like Starmer in many ways.
Yeah.
And she was absolutely hated, because as closely as she tried to follow all the procedures and do it by the book, that the way that it's supposed to be done, she couldn't actually do anything positive by running the machine as it was meant to be run. And back then, the right was basically, you know, the Tories are our thing, they're our party, and the South is largely right-wing, and it's largely our thing. So they kind of put all of their hopes in Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson came in, and he was incredibly popular to begin with. He had this huge cult of personality around him. He's our guy. He's going to do the thing. But he was trapped in the same machine as Theresa May.
Correct.
And it turned out that changing the personality didn't actually do anything. And so Boris Johnson has ended up even more hated than Theresa May. I mean, if you were to talk about your most hated politicians, you probably wouldn't even remember to mention Theresa May, even though she was hated at the same point that we're now. I think the same thing is going to happen to Andy Burnham as happened here. Theresa May is the equivalent to Starmer. He's the equivalent to Boris Johnson. He's going to get this huge popularity boost. Everybody's going to think, well, the Labour people, the left wing, the North, are going to think he's our guy, he's going to come in. But just like Boris Johnson was still trapped by the same machine, he's going to be trapped by the same machine. And it really wouldn't surprise me if he is far more hated than Starmer. As extraordinary as that sounds now.
I mean, that is an extraordinary prediction, considering Keir Starmer's unpopularity peaked at 75% against.
So there is a little bit further you can go, yes.
I mean, I guess there is, yes. And I mean, I'm not signing off on that. I don't agree that that's the case. But I mean, it's not impossible that becomes the case, right? It's certainly not, it's probably not even unlikely that becomes the case. But I'm not sure that's what's going to happen. But that's not exactly what I was talking about. So what I mean is, when you vote for the Conservative Party, what were you actually voting for? What you were voting for is to leave you the fuck alone.
Yes.
Right? That's why people vote for the Lib Dems, because the Lib Dems are essentially a Conservative Party for well-to-do middle England.
I mean, I would have said low taxes and the family and stuff. Well, that's what I would have said 10 years ago.
Don't screw it up.
But actually, all of that, low taxes is leave me alone.
Yep.
The primacy of the family is leave me alone.
Yep.
In fact, all of the other things, sovereignty, that's leave me alone.
Don't flood my place with immigrants. Leave me alone.
Yeah, and they always campaigned on that. David Cameron was like, we're going to bring immigration down to the low tens of thousands. It's all a variant of leave me alone.
Exactly, right. And I think that the South, generally, when it votes for the Conservatives or right-wing parties, it's something along the lines of, just leave me alone. Things are fairly good, and if they're going to be made better, I will make them better. I will work hard. Yeah. I will do the things I'm supposed to do, make sure my family's fed, make sure my business grows. Just leave me alone. Don't screw it up. Mm. And that's, I think, why people vote for the Conservative Party by and large. And so we have a different relationship with the Conservative Party that the Northerners have with the Labour Party, because we have a much more independent mind towards these things, because we aren't the industrial heartland. I think things are different in the North.
Is it that, or is it just that we're 15 years on in our journey, that we've had our Theresa May to Boris Johnson moment?
But the thing is,
it's possible that Labour go through that same arc over the next 10 years.
But the thing is, we weren't asking for the from the Conservatives what the Labour voters are asking for.
That's
from
fair.
Labour,
yeah.
Right? They want something from Labour. They want some affirmative action from Labour. What they want is for Labour to make sure that the government gives them money in these areas as a reward for being the backbone of Britain, for being the people who in previous eras, the industrial might of Britain was based in. Because
That's getting less true.
I appreciate that. Yes. And that's a core part of Andy Burnham's message is, I hate Thatcher's neoliberalism for deindustrialising us, right? He would have wanted that instead of Thatcher's neoliberalism that has destroyed the mines, destroyed the coal and various other industrial, textile manufacturing and whatever else, he would have preferred hard protectionism. It's like, no, we'll keep these British industries. We will just make it so that whatever foreign country can't flood our markets with cheap.
I mean, that is theoretically possible to do, but if you want a strong industry, the number one thing you need is cheap energy.
Sure.
And the reports, I mean, you probably won't have announced by tomorrow by the time this
probably
goes out.
Probably Miliband doing it.
Yeah. So who's a...
Yeah, I'm not saying...
Zero zealot, yes.
I'm not saying he can do any of these...
Oh, no. I'm not suggesting that you're making the argument that he's competent.
No, yeah, yes. Exactly.
Yes.
Because as far as I'm aware, his entire career is basically government handouts. So,
yes.
Great. But that is actually very much in line with what the North expects, because the way that they held themselves in esteem was not through entrepreneurialism, right? That's not possible when it's like, okay, well, what do you do? Well, there's a coal mine here. Go on, be an entrepreneur around a coal mine. No, you're going to go down the mine and you're going to work. That's you being an entrepreneur, right? And that has to be either a state-owned or state sort of instantiated business, right? This is not something you can just rock up with your own little coal mine and maybe it grows into a bigger coal mining operation. That's not how that works, right? This is the sort of thing that requires mega industrial power, finance, organization, expertise to get this industry up and running.
But just give me a job, I'll work hard, and I also want respect. And if I get those three things, I'm happy.
Exactly. I want to know that my family will be taken care of if I die in a terrible accident. I want a good pension for spending my life breaking my back, doing all this hard work. I want respect for providing you with this you desperately need. If you want, 100 years ago, it was if you wanted coal to power the ships or steel to be able to make the bloody ships, you want the Welsh and the North.
Textiles, I mean, the lot, really.
Yeah, whatever it is. Right, but the materiel for the British Empire came from these communities. And so they weren't like, oh, yeah, we're super entrepreneurial. They were like, no, our philosophy is one of duty, right? We have and therefore we expect reciprocation from the party that we are relying on. And that's what the Labour Party was for, even back when it was originally founded. The purpose was Welsh coal miners being like, okay, we don't want to get screwed by the imperial state taking advantage of us. We need what is essentially a party of ethnic patronage.
Well, I mean, the party's name is literally Labour.
Exactly. It was completely
It's for people doing the labour.
And it was completely transparent about it, and it was obviously a necessary thing in the context of liberals presiding over a worldwide empire. You're like, well, look, we're going to let the market deal with it. It's like, okay.
But, I mean, everything you're describing is radically different to the Labour of today. The Labour of today is the biggest constituents are going to be public sector workers, people on welfare, and people who administer non-jobs, so DI. I mean, we know from our guys who were in Makerfield, if there's a Porsche on the driveway, if it's a big house, it's a labour place.
Yeah. Because, of course, things have changed.
Because of the high-paying public sector non-jobs.
Yes, and this is why Andy Burnham hates Margaret Thatcher, right? She essentially, and the reason the North will never forgive her, is she not only stole the source of dignity that these communities, the average person in these communities had, but she did it in a very cold and ideological way, in the way that liberals have always dealt with it. And this goes back, like, You can see this in the Irish potato famine. If you just go read the Wikipedia page,
yes.
It begins with the Conservatives in government, and the Conservatives are like, okay, we'll just ship in food then. And the Liberals then take over, and they're like, no, the market will provide.
I mean, to be fair to Thatcher, the rate of deindustrialisation, closing coal mines and all that kind of stuff, it's if you look at it on a graph, it's pretty consistent from Callaghan through Thatcher into Blair. The only difference is that she didn't use mollycoddling words around what was happening. She described it as a necessary process. She embraced the process of the industrial, but it was a trend that was happening
I'm not saying it wasn't, but there was a kind of coldness and the attitude of the market will provide that actually it turned out the market didn't provide. Right. So it turns out that actually in these areas, if you're not, there's a reason that in the industrial north, that if you're not making steel, digging iron out of the ground, or if you're not digging coal out of the ground, there's not much to do there. That was the resource they're not in strategic choke points where trade comes through or anything like that. No, this is the hinterland where the raw materials are brought from, right? So actually, it turns out that was basically the market providing, right? Mm. That was what it was for. And so the coldness and the sort of you're on your own attitude has left these places absolutely destitute. And the last thing they had to try and claw back some of the prosperity and dignity that this community has was the Labour Party.
Which was now being run by a soft Southern lawyer.
Which has been hijacked by the Southern human rights lawyers.
Yes.
Exactly, right? And so Burnham's message is precisely this. And I think that is what accounts for his overwhelming victory. I mean, look at the polling, as you can see, right? None of the polling even had him at 50%. On the average, 45% in the 2024 general election. Like, that's kind of where they were polling at. And instead, he got 55% nearly. Absolutely trashed everyone. Reform underperformed. Conservatives, well, they performed actually about as average. Lib Dems sunk because obviously those people went to Labour. Green went to Labour. Restore didn't exist prior, but Restore polled pretty much in line with their polling, actually. Slightly under, but pretty much exactly where they expected to be.
I mean, very quickly on that, I mean, I will say, look, it took Nigel Farage over 10 years. I think it took him 11 years to get to the point where he came third and kept his deposit.
Yeah.
And they did it on their very first outing.
It took him like 20 years to become an MP.
Yes. Oh, yeah. No. Well, yeah, a little bit longer than that. Yeah, after keeping his deposit and so on. So in terms of growth, they did extraordinarily well. Not as well as we would have hoped, obviously, but they did bloody well. But yeah, the Labour vote, absolute bloody blowout.
Yeah. And that was the thing that surprised everyone. And I think it's because Andy Burnham's message has focused very heavily in this narrative of Labour is the party of patronage for the North and the industrial, post-industrial areas of Britain. And therefore, Andy Burnham is on what I guess we could just call a hero's journey. He's on a hero's journey for the Northerners. We'll get into exactly how he campaigned, which I think is really shows what I'm saying here. But you can look at the focus groups that they did before the election, right? You have, for example, Mike Irvin, a veteran who told us he'd never voted Labour in his life, but had been to a coffee morning hosted by Burnham and was considering voting for Burnham. We've got a voice here to change the country. We've got a chance of a lifetime here to impact the way we want it to be. It's exactly how we talk about Rupert Lowe. It's exactly how we talk about Rupert Lowe.
Oh, we're trying to restore the country because we've given up on the Conservative Party, but they're trying to restore the Labour Party.
Yes, that's exactly it. Andy Burnham's message was a deeply right-wing message. It was restore Labour.
Yes.
Whereas we're like, restore Britain.
You can always imagine Andy Burnham in the middle of a field saying, we're going to restore Labour Party. It's going
to
be incredibly painful,
never
but it needs to be done.
He'd never go to a field. Yes. Go to a Mancunian post-industrial.
But you get my point. He could make a version of
the closed down factory.
He could make a version of the Rupert Lowe video, except directed at, we're going to save the Labour Party.
100%. It was an expressly nativist campaign. He didn't bring up immigrants. He wasn't posing with black people all the time, although there are one or two black people in his videos. But like, he's not posing with foreigners. He's saying, no, it's for us, the native. What's he saying? He's not appealing to an abstract category. He's not appealing to British values or human rights.
It wasn't the 2019 Tory party campaign, which was Rishi Sunak holding up a coin
2019.
Saying...
2019. Oh, yeah.
The diversity is our strength, and posing with as many Indians as he possibly could. It wasn't that.
No, it wasn't appealing to British values or anything like that. What it was appealing to is the native people of Manchester. That's what it was appealing to. It's a deeply right-wing campaign he was running.
Everybody is right-wing for the things that they care about.
Exactly. That's precisely it, right? And so these people were like, oh, yeah, great, Andy Burnham. And one chap says, Andy Burnham was one of us, which is true. He literally is from this area. He grew up in this area. He is literally a product of this area. And as the mayor...
his kids go to school there or something like that.
Yeah. They literally go to school there. So he chose an area that always voted Labour, but was becoming disillusioned, and was like, no, I'm literally from here. I'm going to do what Rupert Lowe is doing elsewhere for us. I mean, he didn't mention Rupert Lowe, obviously, but that's the message is,
yeah,
this is a nativist movement for the North that Andy Burnham is leading. Why? To recapture the Labour Party from those southern human rights lawyers who kidnapped it, right? And that's, he's on a hero's journey. And that's why, boom, like Rupert Lowe and Great Yarmouth, I'm gonna recapture Britain from the interests that have taken it away from us. He made the same pitch.
Yeah, younger viewers won't remember this, but in the early years of the Blair government, there was so much of this discussion. You could find an old-time Labour figure bemoaning and railing against the Blair government because they recognised basically what you're describing now, which is the Labour Party was being hijacked by southern lawyers.
Yes. It's exactly what happened. And this is exactly the sort of thing you hear in the polling groups. Like, you've got people like, just randomly saying, well, I like him more than Keir Starmer. I think he's more for the working class. That's just how he comes across. He's one of us, rather than one of these politicians, like the majority of them, that you can't trust. Another one said, I don't know much about him, Keir Starmer, but I know I don't like him. But when I'm actually asked the question, I can't tell you why I don't like him. It's because he just doesn't feel like he's on your side.
Yes.
You're not his concern.
So, I mean, I watch all of the left-wing podcasts, you know, the news agents and the one with that Rory Stewart bloke and the other war crime guy and a whole bunch of them and
Alistair Campbell. Yeah.
And they've all been over the last 24 hours, they've all been trying to answer this question. Why is Keir Starmer so hated? And the thing is, from the perspective of the machine, he did everything right.
And that's why they like him. That's why he managed to stay in.
Well, it's why the machine liked him. It's why they liked him. And they're completely unable to answer the question, why would anyone dislike him?
Yeah.
They don't. The modern Labour Party, the modern left, they simply cannot see the problem.
Because Keir Starmer, in isolation, if you knew nothing about British politics, he'd feel like Labour's John Major, right? He's boring. He's really, really boring. Why do you have any strong feelings about him at all? He's a grey man in a grey suit, talking through his nose. Like, you would think it'd be like, okay, well, he's just really dull, don't know how he writes.
All he ever wants to do is follow the procedure.
Exactly.
And jail his political enemies.
Well, exactly.
Yes.
But it's because he feels like he is an enemy. He feels like he's against you. And that's what this person in Maker feel. I can't tell you why I don't like him, but I just don't like him. And it's like, yeah, no one does, because he's not on your side. Whereas Andy Burnham...
Well, he serves the machine, which is not on your side.
Exactly, the machine's destroyed.
The machine has become Blairite, it has become Southern Labour lawyers.
Exactly, the machine captured your party, has taken your party of patronage, and again, like, there are areas in the South that have always voted Conservative, but there are a lot fewer and further between than they are in the North, when it's always voting Labour, right? The South can quite easily flip between Lib Dem and Conservative, because essentially it's,
yes,
do you want a smiley, happy person who's going to leave you alone forever, or do you want a slightly more serious
I live in the typical South, Winchester, typical Southern affluent, flips all the time between Tory and Labour, Tory and Lib Dem.
Yeah, because it's just, do you want the shiny smiley face of I'll leave you alone, or the more somber but we'll leave you alone, you know, like which version of leave me alone do you want is what's being offered in the South, right? But that's not the case in the North. Anyway, so let's go on to the next. You get more Makerfield focus groups afterwards. And he says, even some reform leaners said they broke for Burnham because it was the only way to get Starmer out. For others, there was a real optimism tinged with relief. Interestingly, they didn't mind that he didn't have fleshed out national policies to be the Prime Minister, because it's not about policies. Because like you said, people are trapped in the machine. Everyone can see we're trapped in the machine. We need a guy who's on our side, who can do whatever he can against the machine when he's in power.
But this is why he's going to fail, and this is why he's going to become more hated than even Starmer was, is because he has absolutely no concept of what he has to do to change the machine. And again, another Theresa May analogy. If you remember Theresa May, she coined the term of the Tories as the nasty party.
Yes.
And she
wasn't it?
And she genuinely believed that because she was a nice person, that when she came into office, if she was nice, that would just sort of emanate like a Care Bear stare out across the entire civil service. And then all of a sudden, the machinery would become a nice machine because a different, you know, token had been plugged in the top. That's what Andy thinks. He thinks that just because he's nice, the machine is still going to do the machine things, the awful, awful machine things.
See, I don't know if he'll be hated. I think he'll be viewed as a tragic figure. Because I do think you're right,
that
he'll fail.
Do you think that Boris Johnson is a tragic figure or a hated figure?
Well, hated now, obviously.
Right.
But that's because Labour didn't hate him because he was a betrayer. Labour hated him because he was a grifter, right? He was a jokester. He was someone who would lie.
Now, I'm talking about what the right wingers think.
Yeah. That's why he was always hated by the left. But that's not what the average person isn't like the left, right? So the average person doesn't think like that. And it's so Boris Johnson for the right is hated because he's a betrayer. I'm actually worried that there's a sizable constituency in the middle of that who still quite like Boris Johnson. Frankly,
yeah, probably,
you know, and I'm genuinely worried about it. And if, you know, God forbid he comes back, I think Burnham will be seen as a tragic figure because I think actually a lot of people for him, I mean, whenever you listen to him talk, I think he believes it, right? I genuinely think he believes it in the same way that I believe Rupert Lowe believes what he's saying.
Yes,
I genuinely think Burnham believes what he's saying too. And so, you're right,
but there's no depth,
sure.
He believes all 1 inch of his political philosophy,
sure. If I can just get control of the government, I can get it to dole out Gibbs forever, is his entire philosophy and career. Mm. Yeah, I agree. He doesn't know how it works. But again, Labour is the party of ethnic patronage for Northerners, right? And the Welsh, right? So for the mining areas, if you consider these separate ethnicities to the Southerners, then you can see exactly, you know, they see the Southerners making tons of money. And you need to reinvest that in the North. And that was what Boris has promised, to level up the North.
The thing is, all of the Southern money has already been extracted.
Yeah, I know.
And we're now borrowing $130 billion a year from the bond market.
I know. I'm not saying it will work, right?
Yes.
I'm just saying that's what's in their minds, right?
Yes.
That this is how they perceive the world. The proper ordering of the world is that, we don't really have that much to say about the South. I mean, what does Andy Burnham ever say about the South? Nothing. He's got nothing to say about how the economy of the South should work, because this is to him it's like manna from heaven. That's not how it works.
Yes, it's like us two discussing, I don't know, shopping ponies and makeup. It's
I don't know anything about
that.
Yeah, all I know is it's my job as the patron of this, you know, area of the country to go and extract money from London to give it to the North. That's all I know. And that's the hero's journey he's on. No, I'm going to go down there and I'm going to extract some bloody money from the markets and put it in the North. And it's like, okay, well, historically, that's literally what the Labour Party was for. That's all they ever did. And that's all Makerfield has ever voted for them to do. And this ancestral party of protection, this patronage as a form of protection for these communities, has been, and they've been left, for, as far as I'm concerned, for the last 40 years, like kicked out into the wild ravages of howling capitalism without having the institutional knowledge with how to deal with it. Because if for us, the government collapsed tomorrow, like, great.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah.
So I can pay far less taxes.
Yes.
Brilliant, you know.
I mean, we need to organise a local vigilante group to make sure our streets are safe. But I mean, after that was done,
we could sort it out.
Yeah.
Right?
Maybe get a volunteer squad to keep the water pressure up. But apart from that, we'd be good in a week.
But if that's completely alien to your worldview, you're not an entrepreneurial society in the North. They are institutionalised, right? Mm. They think of themselves as being embedded in the vast institutions of state. Mm. And so obviously, if you're in that mindset, it's righteous and just that when we provide X, you provide Y in return. This is righteous. And it's not wrong, right? I don't disagree with it at all. And this is how I would probably agree that, if we're going to have a resettlement, a reconstitution of the country, yes, I do want the North actually doing industrial things. They want to do industrial things. I would be happy with some severe protection.
Ed Miliband would not be happy with any of this.
He'd be very angry at me, you know. Not my problem.
Mm.
You know, let's have some severe protectionism against the sort of predatory economies of place like China that have been deliberately trying to destroy us for 100 years, well, screw
them. We're happy making it easy for them. But
I know. Yes, well, come on in and ruin us. That Huawei thing, nearly taking over our bloody communications infrastructure, on the cusp of it with Boris. It's like, are you mad? Do you have no sense of self-preservation? But anyway, right? I actually find myself kind of agreeing with Andy Burnham's mission, because I hate the system too. I hate the machine too. And if someone can destroy the machine, which I don't think Burnham can, but if someone's trying this desperate, heroic last failure, okay, fine. I actually kind of like Burnham for it.
Well, I mean, he can destroy the machine just by doing exactly what he did in Manchester, borrowing all the money, getting the bond market to turn us off.
And I meant then, destroying the machine without destroying the country.
Yes. Right. Oh, well, that's harder.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. I don't think he can do that. Right. I mean, you know, I think Rupert Lowe could actually destroy the machine without destroying the country.
Yes.
But I don't think Burnham can do it. But the point is, Burnham isn't cynical, right? Burnham is actually sincere, and he is actually authentic. He is of the thing he is claiming to represent. Unlike Keir Starmer, unlike Tony Blair, unlike David Cameron, like, these are not people who actually represent their constituents.
You could make the argument that Keir Starmer was authentically a human rights lawyer.
Yeah, but the Labour Party is not meant to be authentically a party of human rights.
Well, no, it just became that after Blair.
Exactly.
Yes.
Right, so this is the thing. The system, the machine has hijacked the traditional parties of Britain, which is why we're in this position of complete turmoil, fractured political landscape, where there's literally five or six parties that could win anywhere, and who knows, you know? So it's just like, it's mad. And so it's the strength of the narrative that Burnham is putting forward that is actually what is winning. And I realise I've really been hammering this point, but it's just so true. Like, you can see this. We'll watch just...
You can...
Cheers, lad. I was born in Liverpool, but my journey began in this area. I went to a school about 2 miles over there, and I remember coming here, 1984, and getting battered on these pitches on the rugby league field, but I didn't hold it against them. I sent my three kids here because Eddie's is a great school.
Right, that is that's a campaign so right-wing, so nativist, that is just... Keir Starmer could never have anything like this. He doesn't hold fond memories of anything.
Yes.
Right? He doesn't dream. He doesn't love.
No.
You know, he, it's mad. And you see this over and over. Like, here's just his campaign speech. We'll just listen to it and listen to the way he talks.
So what is that change? I did talk about the need to change Labour in this campaign. And we've got to now take this moment to answer the challenges that have been laid down. I did describe it last night as a last chance to change. And I think that's how people here kind of saw it when I was talking to them on the doorsteps. And they said, well, Andy, maybe we can give you our support this time. But you know, it's not a blank cheque. It's not ongoing. You have to respond to what people here are saying. You have to do something to make life more affordable, to put more money in people's pockets, to give people more breathing space again so that they can have a better life. That's what people were saying, and we must respond to that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so nakedly nativist. This is Labour is our party. It's not Keir Starmer's party. See, the guy about is just like, yeah, no, that's so totally... And they truly believe. And this is...
It's very overtly the case you'd be making, which is, I've heard the message, go and extract resources.
Oh, very much. But that's fine, because that's what the North was. Mm. We extract materiel from the North, and they need money from us. That's fine.
Yeah, well, it used to be that way anyway, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, but historically, traditionally, this is what the mindset of the Northerners is. And that's fine. Mm. Like, that worked great. Okay, great. We've got, you know, good, hard-working population who extract high-quality resources that we put to great use, and that gives everyone what they want. This is the traditional settlement of Britain through the 19th and 20th centuries. It was fantastic. Worked brilliantly, allowed us to create a world-spanning empire.
Yes,
you know, and so I'm not surprised they feel, okay, why aren't we getting money from the government now? Because this is always what we did. Why isn't that happening? Why are we hearing about bloody human rights lawyers, and why are we hearing about all this nonsense? This isn't helping us. And
yes, Well, I mean, they are still getting all the sort of wealth transfers that they used to get. The problem is that because the government is overspending so much, the inflation has reached a point where
sure
those transfers are not enough, and they need to be up to keep up with inflation.
Sure, it will not work. Mm. Right. The economy has changed. The situation has changed, but the people in the north haven't. Right, by and large, where they've been ethnically replaced, maybe they have changed, but the white working class in the north still remember. And so I'm genuinely sympathetic to what they're doing here, because for them, this is sentimental, this is emotional, this is moral, this is a great calling. Mm. That Andy Burnham has said, look, this is the last chance before Labour has its ancestral roots as a party severed in these communities. Andy Burnham has come in as their white knight, the Gandalf of the Labour Party, and he's like, right, okay, I'm going to save this. And I've never voted for Labour, and I never would vote for Labour. I hate the Labour Party in every way, but I understand why these people don't.
Yeah.
And for the Labour Party to become the party of minoritarian interests, to become the party of abstract lawyers' interests, I bet that feels like a massive betrayal. A massive betrayal. But Andy Burnham believes in the old Labour. He believes in the communities that he's born and raised in, that he sends his kids to. He believes it. And so I'm not surprised that he got his massive win. I'm not surprised that they came out at a much higher rate than anyone expected. And we're like, okay, no, this is our guy. It's the same that we're doing with Rupert Lowe.
Yep.
And so I'm quite sympathetic. And you see this in his victory speech, right? Again, he hammers this in his victory speech.
Everyone knows.
Let me just get it to the right point. It's about 2:20. We'll start there.
To answer that. But I do say to my own party, this is a final chance to change. This is what people said directly to me on the hundreds of doorsteps that I stood on. We must hear it. We must act upon it, and we must get it right. There will be no second chance. But it is a chance now, from this result tonight, to build a new politics based on unity and hope, turning away from the path that takes us to a divided, dark politics of the kind we see in the United States. We must now take this path and put this country back on the right path and bring people back together and get things working properly again.
Now, like you've said, he's not the guy. Right? He's not going to fix it.
But I take your point. As soon as you substitute out the word country and nation for the Labour Party, yeah, it's very internally consistent.
Yes. And it's very right-wing for them.
Yes. Right-wing Labour Party restoration, because you care about, you're right-wing about the things you care
about. Exactly. It's a deeply sentimental pitch he's making, and so I'm not surprised that he did so well, actually. Now, looking at it in retrospect, like, at the time I was on the same plane as everyone else, but I've been thinking about it a lot. I'm like, oh no, all of this was actually there to you could have predicted, but no one did. The overwhelming victory, I mean, everyone knew he was going to win because it was but like it was there. And he's been very, like, I don't know, kindness posting, you know, he's showing his people that he really appreciates them. And I can see why this has an appeal. Like, he's just constantly posting all this, like, sort of soppy stuff, because he's leaving his position as Manchester mayor. Now, being a mayor of somewhere is great, right? It's not a partisan position. You don't have to play the political game. You're not in PMQs asking divisive questions and getting the back forth. Nope. No, being the mayor is great, especially if you're in Manchester and you're like, I've got 500 million from the central government, buses, this, that, the other. You get to turn up and be like, yeah, I'm opening this, I'm doing this. Isn't this wonderful? This is great for us here in this place. You get to be just a good news person over and over. And Boris had the same effect. He was super popular after being the mayor of London.
In London, surprisingly.
Yeah, he was incredibly popular. Because it's just like, you know, I'm just going to do this thing that will help out the city. And where's the partisan argument? It's not there. It's just like, do you live in London? Do you want Boris Johnson to increase stop and search? Of course you bloody do. Have knife crimes gone down? Brilliant. Yep. Excellent.
But London or Manchester do not need to be legible to international treaty obligations.
No.
They don't need to fit into the agenda of Davos.
Yes.
You know, they are allowed to be particular.
Yes. And they are. That's the entire job. And they don't have to be divisive in their own constituency. And so they can come out like Boris or Burnham with a wonderful reputation. If you do this for, like, you know, 10 years, like Boris... Did Boris... Was it 10 years he was mayor of London?
I'm sure it was a couple of terms, yeah.
I thought it was two terms that he had. Yeah. But anyway, but the point is, you can sit in this spot for a while, just do a half-decent job. Just do a half-decent job and come out with a glowing aura, unlike in any other party politics, right? In any other politics in the country, really, where it's partisan. You've got it made. But you can tell he really obviously enjoyed his job. Mm. Whether you agree with what he did or not, there are a lot of people who appreciated what he did. There are a lot of people who appreciate him for what he is. And he's obviously not an inhuman machine man. Like, he shows he is a human being and he likes people and people like him. And so this is, I, you know, I'm looking at it thinking, I wish you well. You know, I would like you to fix the Labour Party.
Yes.
Because I don't want a demented party of aliens and rules to continue destroying the country.
I mean, he has run for the Labour leader twice before.
Yeah.
And got rebuffed. I mean, there is a reason he's in Manchester, because he failed at London politics.
Sure. But that's... So,
yes.
But go on.
I can see the journey that he's going on.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Manchester has a budget of 2 billion versus 2 trillion for the rest of the country. It is a substantially harder problem.
I'm not thinking he's going to fix anything.
No.
But I enjoy the narrative that he is. Because it was the strength of the story that you win on. Mm. Right? I've come to believe that if you want to be a successful politician, it is the strength of the story that you're telling the constituents. Mm. And for him, he has a very strong story. And they rewarded him overwhelmingly. Again, just like Rupert in Great Yarmouth. Very strong story. People are like, yeah, no, I'm coming out for that. You know, people feel like they're part of a hero's journey. Again, he can't win. I don't think he'll win. I mean, I don't even wish him ill. I hope he does win. I hope he does do, you know, like anything to break the machine. Even if it's now like, okay, now we've got like, you know, quasi-socialist like northern retards running the government and wasting money and, oh God, we're going bankrupt. Okay, fine. At least that's accidental, you know. Like Angela Rayner, like Lisa Nandy, Andy Burnham, they might be retarded, but they're not evil. They don't hate the country. They don't hate the people. Unlike the London lawyer set, like Lord Hermer, Keir Starmer.
Yes.
Like, you know, David Lammy. They don't hate the country.
I mean, they were very quick off the blocks as soon as they got power to start going around arresting soldiers who 40 years ago...
Full force of the law.
Yeah. But they were arresting British soldiers who 40 years ago, as a 19-year-old, on the most dangerous day of their lives, you know, had to use lethal force because their life was under threat.
Releasing criminals from prison.
Yeah.
Ending jury trial. You know, like, you know, Andy Burnham might screw everything up, and you know, of course he's going to, but, like, at least it won't be because he wanted to, you know? Like, so there's that, right? So anyway, Burnham is... currently engaging in his march to the Capitol.
Yes.
He's actually there at the time of recording. But it was genuinely fascinating.
Yes, this.
This is the BBC with a helicopter filming the train he's taking to get to London. And as we posted, it's like Lenin being sent back to Russia. Who do these people think Burnham is? Well, actually... Burnham is important, because what we're looking at are the factions of the Labour Party in their last gasp, right? So Labour at the moment, for anyone who's not aware, is like the third or fourth party in the country. Mm. Like, is it, you know, you wouldn't believe they're in government. Yes. You know, you wouldn't believe they're the current ruling government.
Well, we've seen polls that put them on 4 seats.
Yeah.
And they currently have 400.
Yes. And yeah, exactly. They have 408 politicians, MPs. They're the ruling party with an overwhelming majority. And they are they're a dead party walking.
And bear in mind, this is the second attempt to do this, because Labour became a party of Southern lawyers under Blair, but Jeremy Corbyn was an attempt to undo this, except he was from the hard left.
Yes.
Thing is, for the hard left is you can't ascribe them as being particularly nice, but they do have a coherent philosophy.
Yeah, they want to literally destroy everything.
Yes. Burnham is soft left, which is, you know, he wants all the upside and lovey feelings and the redistribution from the hard left, but he wants the market to work like it's a Tory government or something.
Yes.
It is an incoherent philosophy.
Well, no, it's actually kind of coherent. It's a philosophy of not being in charge. Essentially, what Burnham is saying is there's a hierarchy in this country, and I am always second place. I expect a hardline conservative government that operates a ruthless free market that brings tons of money in. And my job is not to be above that. My job is to be below that, but to make demands of that to get some of that money back to me.
Yep.
So it's not a philosophy of rulership. It is a philosophy of, honestly, being lower down.
Let the Tories have two terms to improve things, and then we come in for one term and spend it.
Essentially, if this it's kind of feudal, right?
Mm.
It's a philosophy that accepts the Tories are kind of the feudal lord, but as the baron under the duke, I still have rights and I can still make demands, right? And so it's like, okay, but you can't be made the king or the baron or the duke, because you don't know how this works. You don't know how he got the money that you wanted redistributing anyway, right? So anyway, like I said, it's all going to fail. But like, you're exactly right. This is the last attempt at wresting the Labour Party away from the human rights lawyers. Mm. Because as you said correctly, Keir Starmer and the hard left, McDonnell, what's her name?
Diane Abbott.
Oh yeah, yeah, Diane Abbott in that. But Diane Abbott,
McDonald, Jeremy Corbyn, Diane Abbott. I mean, these are the
sort. Yeah, but Rebecca Long Bailey, those sorts of
right, yeah.
You know, the hard left that managed to hijack the party in 2017.
Yes,
they weren't hijacking it for the actual purpose of the party. Right, the purpose of the party is what Andy Burnham is doing. It's no patronage for the North. That's literally all this party is for. Mm. Make sure the central government gives them the money that they feel they're entitled to because of the back-breaking but national Labour. Because the Labour Party was always a party of, we're part of the national project. You know, that was the thing.
Mm.
It viewed the country as a national project because they couldn't exactly be entrepreneurial at the steel mills, right? Fine. That's all totally fine. Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell, I mean, John McDonnell said it exclusively, quote, my job is to destroy capitalism. Mm. Now, that's not what the Labour Party is for. In fact, the Labour Party was famously weird in socialist circles for not being an out-and-out Marxist party.
Mm.
It wasn't there to destroy capitalism. You know, it would have its left in the Marxists, obviously, but actually most of it was just patronage for the working class. They weren't trying to destroy the British Empire. They weren't trying to end private property. They weren't trying to overthrow capitalism. And the ideologues led by Corbyn and McDonnell got in control of it. And the British public, like, not on your Nelly. We would rather Theresa May than some guy who pals around with the IRA or Hamas and Hezbollah. No terrorist group that Jeremy Corbyn ever met, he ever had a crossword with. Right?
Yeah, that's true.
We're not having it. Jeremy Corbyn, obviously a hater of Britain.
Mm.
In the same way, frankly, Keir Starmer is obviously a hater of the British people.
Mm.
Like, and so Burnham is right. He is the last chance, but the thing is, he's also the best chance. Because otherwise, I mean, if Burnham fails, that's the Labour Party over.
Yeah. In this clip, so the helicopter followed the taxi he got
as
off
well,
the
yeah.
train as well. Blimey. That is messianic, isn't it?
Well, it is in the narrative of the Hobbit coming from Manchester to throw the ring into Mordor. It is. That's what's happening.
It's Peter Jackson's drone.
And the thing is, it worked. Like, Keir Starmer was like, okay, I concede. I will come out. And he has a little blub, Theresa May style.
He does.
We'll watch it just so you can see it. But it's just,
the question my party is asking now is whether I am best placed to lead us into the next general election. I have heard the answer of my parliamentary party to that question. And I accept that answer with good grace. Every decision I've taken has been about putting the country I love first. That is why I will resign as leader of the Labour Party. I have spoken to His Majesty the King this morning to inform him of my decision. I will ask the National Executive Committee of the Labour Party to set out a timetable with nominations opening on the 9th of July and completed by the summer recess.
Doesn't actually have the blubby bit in this, but it's very Theresa May, you know, the country that I love.
There was a bit just after where he starts blubbing because he's lost his job, and that really made me think, because I remember I became emotional when I heard about the massacre in Southport.
I
blubbed at that myself. And I got emotional at the murders of Henry Nowak and Wayne Broadhurst and Rihanna White, and all the other murders. They all got me emotional, and Starmer famously is completely unemotional. He did not get emotional at any of those.
Well, he got angry at the White Working Class.
However, he did get emotional when his own ability to jail his political enemies came to an end.
That is true. I mean, the for Starmer, the integrity of the system, the machine, is everything. He is the man of the system. He is here to protect the system. And Annie Burnham is here to actually destroy it.
The only thing I'm worried about is quite famously, the first scandal that he was involved in is Lord Alley has been buying his underpants for him. So is Lord Alley going to continue to buy this man's underpants now that he leaves number 10? Do we need to whip up an extra fund so that the ex-prime ministers can have...
Yeah, underpants? I mean, I suspect that Burnham isn't going to have Mandelson controlling his Labour Party for him.
No.
So, you know, fewer scandals, fewer rent boys, I imagine.
You know? Yes.
Like, so, you know, like, actually, weirdly, Keir Starmer is surprisingly scandal-ridden.
I mean, Starmer had so many rent boys that associated with his former properties that as long as it's less than five, he'd be all right. It will be fewer.
Yeah. And so, just a quick thing is, I think what really is remarkable is Andy Burnham, his... morality is his like moral standing is in his community is based on the relationships he has with the people around him, so he comes across as very normal, very well adjusted, probably isn't a weird degenerate perv, right? Keir Starmer, it's rules and procedures. It's not about your actual relationships with people, so he can be weird and degenerate as long as it's not affecting the rules and procedures. And so this very, very different kinds of men who are but anyway, the point being, Andy Burnham has won the first battle, right? He has managed to actually oust the Southern human rights lawyers from their position of primacy in the party. And you see all the knees bending. Wes Streeton's like, oh, yeah, I'd fold. Let him go. Even Lammy, oh, yeah, definitely Andy Burnham could just be coronated. And these are all Starmer's, like, you know, close. They're in his government right now.
So this is the thing that makes me think that because I had previously said that there was no way there's going to be a general election off the back of a leadership change.
I mean, maybe.
And the reason I said that is because nobody would be able to win the leadership without saying saying to at least 150 Labour MPs, if not 250 Labour MPs, if not 397 Labour MPs, you're going to lose your seat if I do this. Because the support for him is so overwhelming from Labour MPs, he can actually now push through a general election if he wanted to on the other side. Well, it becomes a possibility.
I suppose the thing to look for is how does this affect Labour in the polls? Does the Labour... I mean, it's bound to get some improvement. I've seen estimates of like a 6% bump in the polls, which would put him on about 24%. That's not great, right?
No.
Like that...
No, that is...
That's still bad.
That's probably not winning, and not unless something weird happens on the right of politics.
Like, he would have to get a significant... But the thing is, it's not impossible that he gets one.
No. Right?
Because he is far more likable than Keir Starmer. Yeah.
And again, another couple of quick historical analogies there. So, Gordon Brown did not take an early election when he took over, and it really cost him. The narrative turned against him. He should have taken an early election. But the counterpoint is, to mention Theresa May again, she did have an early election when she changed into the leadership. And she, you know, pissed away a majority for a barely workable majority. Then it was torturous ever since after that. So which way will go, I don't know. I'm just saying that I no longer think that a general election is off the table.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, really up to Burnham. Personally, I think that the scale of the Makerfield victory for Burnham has made it so now he is the driving force in the Labour Party by far. All of his opponent has conceded. All of his opponent's lieutenants are bending the knee and just being like, yeah, no, we're packing it in. Yep, it's Andy Burnham. You're the king of the Labour Party now. It's like, okay, so that's great. if he needed an election to gain control of his party, that's a problem that he solved. He doesn't need to do that. I think he's going to be relatively unchallenged, because obviously the reason this is necessary is because Andy Burnham was watching the Labour Party cratering. And if the Labour, I mean, this was probably going to be the last Labour government. And if Andy Burnham doesn't pull this across, then the Labour Party itself will just die. And that is a part of the tradition of the North. It's their ancestral party. Mm. It is their party. Having these Southern lawyers hijack it from them and then destroy it so they can never rise again,
yeah,
that's a horrible thing. Again, I'm not a Labour voter because I'm not from the North, but, like, you know, I can see why they'd be bothered about this and why they don't want that to happen. Because whether you like it or not, it's theirs. Anyway, so what can we expect from Andy Burnham? Well, what was this? Just an empty tweet. What was that?
I saw it as he deleted it.
Yeah, that was supposed to be Andy Burnham congratulating Keir Starmer. Oh, there we go. Yeah, so, right, yeah, there we go. So, Andy Burnham is already taking a magnanimous, victorious position here, right? Keir has given huge service to our country, and I want to thank him for his leadership and dedication during such a challenging period. What a generous thing to say. Because Keir Starmer's why it was such a challenging period is why everyone hates the Labour Party, is why the Labour Party is about to die, right?
Yes.
So anyway, the point being, he's being magnanimous, right? Keir Starmer was not magnanimous. He kicked Jeremy Corbyn out ruthlessly. He nearly kicked Diane Abbott out. It's amazing. John McDonnell still.
Well, in another part of the Starmer speech that wasn't in the clip that you played just a minute ago, I mean, actually, who was he going after in his speech? It was actually the Labour left. He was still going after the Labour left.
Anti-Semitism. Absolutely. Burnham is not being like that. So Burnham has legitimacy, right? Because he's being magnanimous because he feels legitimate. And this is the right way to approach this. No, I am the true king of the Labour Party. I have arrived. I don't even need to put my enemies to death. I'm that legitimate.
Well, not when they're all bending the knee.
Exactly. But
And actually, if all of them bend the knee, he could be Prime Minister a week tomorrow or a week,
exactly,
a week after this comes out.
Yeah. In, was it 2 weeks, something like that? They're going to have a formal leadership election.
Mm. Well, only if people stand in it.
Yeah, yeah, 9th of July, I think it'd
be. So if no one stands in it, it could be very quick.
Exactly. And honestly could be that, well, there isn't anyone who wants to challenge him, actually. Because Wes Streeting was one of the few other people who was like, yeah, I'll put my hat in the ring. Yep. No, I've conceded.
Being the Labour Party, they do feel slightly embarrassed that they haven't had a woman Prime Minister and they haven't had an ethnic candidate. It's always a white man. So there will be some pressure to find either a woman or an ethnic minority. But Labour, they always go for a white man. So they'll probably just have him.
Yeah. And the thing is, well, I think there's a sense of urgency in Labour at the moment.
There should be.
They're looking at the polling and they're like, God, we've got 3 years and then we're dead. Mm. Just dead party. So I genuinely think it's entirely likely we see that essentially this go, no, I'm not bothered in contesting it. You know, the people who said they were going to contest it have already conceded. Andy Burnham probably is just coronated, as people say. And he's taking the magnanimous perspective in, I don't need to kick Keir Starmer, right? Even though, look at what he's done to us. Look at what he's done to the country. Look at what, you know, you could easily, if you were feeling vengeful, just be like, no, you're out. I'll even let Jeremy Corbyn back in.
Yes, it would be very funny if Starmer got the Corbyn treatment.
Well, it'd be symbolic, right?
Yes.
I suspect that Burnham might well let Corbyn back in, actually.
Well, I mean, that would be a smart move, because the reason why Labour is in so much trouble is because it's losing, I think it's 18% of its vote to the left, to the Greens, and 17% to the right, or maybe the other way around. The point is they're being split off on both sides. You can't do much about the right. But what you can do is you can shore up the left and you can make the Labour the big tent of the left again. And all you've got to do is let in, was it Zara Sultano and Corbyn and whatever else. Maybe even offer Zach Bloody Polanski a position.
Well, honestly, not unreasonable or unrealistic to think that they will do this. But you're absolutely right. They need to rebuild the coalition. And Burnham...
Blair had Corbyn in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Corbyn won the leadership only a few years ago.
Yep.
Only, you know, less than 10 years ago. Jeremy Corbyn was the leader of the party.
Blair made no effort to get rid of the left of his party. He simply said no to them.
Exactly.
But Starmer took it to its logical conclusion. If you're going to say no to these people, why don't you just kick them out of the party entirely? And the reason you don't do that is because then you get the Green Party.
It breaks your coalition.
Yes.
Your coalition goes as, and this is what Nigel Farage should have learned regarding Rupert Lowe.
Exactly.
He was the right of your party. He was part of your coalition.
Yes.
You got frightened, and instead of just saying no to him, because you could have done, he couldn't have ever taken over the party, unlike Jeremy Corbyn. No, you kicked him out because you're afraid of him.
Yep.
You were like...
Split your coalition.
You were fragile like Keir Starmer. Look what it's doing now. Right. Rupert Lowe is on the very same journey to become the king of the right after... Yep. Nigel Farage. Now, obviously, we're a few years behind because Labour have been in advanced position on this on us, but we're in exactly the same journey that Andy Burnham's going on right now, right? And so, yeah, he's approached it magnanimously. And, you know, you can be like, well, he's the king of the HR Karens. Yeah, he is. He is absolutely the king of the HR Karens.
Just before this photo was taken, Andy shouted out, hands up if you've ever run a business.
Yes. I saw that tweet going around, and there's, I think it's the woman right at the front there with the blonde hair, actually retweeted and said, I ran a business. I didn't look at it. Like, you know, good for her. The one Labour MP who ran a business.
Burnside, not Tosh, is it? Yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But the point is, yeah, he's king of the HR Karens, but he is the guy who has the legitimacy in the Labour Party now. Mm. He's won everything. They all love him. They're like, thank God, Andy's going to pull our skins out of the fire, you know? And so, yeah, what can we expect from him? Well,
business-friendly socialism.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just... So, as they say in this, right, business-friendly socialism is just an extension of Keynesianism. Crosslandite middle-way socialism and third way before it is a viable political idea, we're told by The Observer. Credit to Burnham for advancing it. Rather than an intellectual pantomime horse, it's a concept with a long degree of pedigree. Because Mario Draghi, the president of the European Central Bank and the saviour of the euro, said, the state, he says, is an engine of productive investment, a provider of social safety net, a guarantor of less inequality, and an architect of the ecosystem in which markets, liberal institutions, and competitive business flourish. Professor Philippe...
It's maybe the second of those at most.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can do all of those other things. Whether it's a good thing and it should do those things is a different question. It's up for, you know, debate. But anyway, the joint winner of Nobel Prize for Economics said, capitalism is like a spirited horse. It takes off readily, escaping control, but when we control its reins firmly, it goes where we wish. Business-friendly socialism about holding capitalism's reins firmly so it goes where we wish. And this is a position that is... currently the zeitgeist in the Labour Party. Wes Streeting cited the same Agion quote only last week in a speech about economic growth and his advocacy of progressive capitalism, when he was making his pitch for the Labour Party about becoming leader before Burnham won spectacularly and got on with it, right? So this is the current dogma of the Labour up-and-comers. This is what we can expect. So they want essentially state-controlled capitalism that has a huge eye towards redistribution, which, frankly, is what you'd expect from the old Labour Party of the North, is what you'd expect. Now, is that going to be good for us? No. They're going to tax the shit out of us. It's going to be high taxes. They're going to be like, yeah, we're taking your taxes, and then we're investing in Manchester or wherever. It's like, oh, brilliant.
So there is this funny clip of Andy Burnham where he's being interviewed, and he does this thing. His politics are very fluid.
Yeah.
You know, he can appear to be pro-EU, anti-EU, he's basically had all of the political positions that were available to have. And he was reeling off this list of issues that Britain faced. And one of them that he reeled through was that Britain is overtaxed. And at which point the interviewer immediately interrupted and said, oh, does that mean we're going to get lower taxes? And the look of shock on his face, no.
I just want to pay fewer taxes.
Yes.
Anyway, so in this article, they talk about his advisors. You've got Andy Haldane, who was a former chief economist of the Bank of England, who has cited the Medici effect of a program such as incubating tech startups or scale-ups and creative industries. You've got Lord Jim O'Neill, the former chief economist of Goldman Sachs, who I think, did you mention him earlier? He's from Manchester. And so he's interested in this. And then you've got Richard Hughes, who was a casualty of the budget leak that forced his resignation as chair of the Office of Budget Responsibility last year. So he has some people with experience of this around him.
Yeah. What you're referring to there is my earlier segment where I kind of basically make the argument the only hope that Andy Burnham has is making a Labour Lord the Chancellor.
Yeah.
because he hasn't got anyone in the Labour Party with the remotest shred of experience to do this.
Sure. It quite possibly going to be Ed Miliband.
Oh, yeah.
But he's got these guys as his advisor.
Or Shabana Mahmood or Wes Streeting. But it should be...
Shabana will stay as Home Secretary.
Yeah, but it should be a Labour Lord, because nobody in the Labour Party understands economics.
Sure. Yeah. Which one of these would you trust to balance your household budget? Mm. Like, none?
Yeah.
None at all? I wouldn't trust any of these people with my finances.
Well, they're all public sector or former SPADs or... journalists or policy advocates.
Absolutely none of them. And that's my own personal household budget, let alone the national budget. Yes. But anyway, this is what we're getting, right?
Yep.
And another thing here is how the Catholic... He's a Catholic. He's actually not the first Catholic. That was actually Boris Johnson. But he said, there's an interesting quote in this where he says, I've always said, and people weren't like this, that I used to have to read in the catechism, the enfranchisement of it on earth was the Labour Party. So again, we do not have the same relationship with the Conservative Party.
No. We do not talk about the Conservative Party in messianic terms.
No. No. You know, again, it's the party of please just don't fuck it up and leave me alone. Right? Yes. That's all it is. So anyway, just to briefly end this then, we get the Farage reaction, right? So Farage's reaction to the Makerfield by-election was to concede that they had underperformed, concede it wasn't what they were hoping for, but he's on the outside of the narrative that he doesn't understand. And we were the same. We were trying to butt into a story that wasn't our story.
Yep.
They're engaged in a long and important
story. To be fair, he's been reacting rather than leading for 18 months now.
Oh, yeah, it's been terrible. And he just says to candidates, Restore, what do you want? Say it to us. And it's like, well, it's a long discussion, Nige, but essentially we want what Andy Burnham is doing to the left. Yep. We want representation. We want our version of Andy Burnham to come back and become the king of the right so he can save the right from oblivion, which is where you're leading it at the moment.
I mean, okay, there's a long answer to this, and maybe we do a show at some point where we give the long answer to this, but the short answer is what do I want? I want the grooming gang scandal brought front and centre, and I want people to pay for that. I want demographic security. And I want people who genuinely believe in the nation.
Yes.
Give me those three things, and we can all be in one big tent on the right.
Yeah.
As long as we have those three things.
And moreover, if we have an Andy Burnham Labour Party, we can negotiate with that.
Yeah. Everything else, bloody tax and what, I don't care about all of that. I want demographic security, and I want a comeuppance for the rape gangs. It's not a big ask, and I want you to be credible that you're going to protect the native people of this country.
I also would like lower taxes.
Yeah, but
I can live with
but
it.
I would be prepared to put that on the back burner as long as my three core things are addressed.
Yeah.
But you can't give us that, and you threw Rupert Love out of the party when he asked for the first of those things.
You've got no big tent. You've got no positive vision.
And it's not expensive. This is, I was thinking of doing, I was doing some pieces on this because a lot of people have been saying, why doesn't the right unite?
It's Farage. He's the reason we can't unite. I mean, look, he's got an entirely negative worldview. Like,
yes.
Britain is broken. We demand a general election. You're not ready for a general election.
No.
You're on 26%. That's not a government. You demand a coalition with the Tories? What, those guys that you keep bringing? What's the point? More of the same. More of the previous paradigm. More of not understanding why you're failing on the right. And again, the framing is just very negative. Andy Burnham's framing was not negative. He's like, I'm going to save the Labour Party.
I mean,
I'm a hero. Farage isn't saying I'm a hero.
Everything out of Reform and its supporters and Nigel, and especially the three wicked witches of Reform, which is, you know, Nadine Dorries, that Alex woman, and Isabel Oakeshott. It's just screaming at you like a girlfriend that you've broken up with, daring to know, what the hell are you going to do without me? You know, how could you be so stupid? It's all that kind of stuff. A coalition between Restore and the Conservatives are more likely, because at least they've maintained civil terms between each other.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that's going to happen, because the Conservative Party is absolutely full of Lib Dems. So it'd have to be the other side of a general election when all those Lib Dems get flushed out. But if you're doing it, then what's the point? You might as well just grow your own thing at that point. But yeah, you're absolutely right. It's the entitlement and the yelling and the negativity. It's like, in Makerfield, why didn't you make the positive case for reform?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. That's a great question. And he even says this, doesn't he? Where he accuses Andy Burnham of stealing his slogan, Get Starmer Out. But the thing is, that wasn't Andy Burnham's slogan. That was, as you said at the beginning,
it was implied, but yeah.
It was implicit.
Yes.
Yeah, Starmer's the evil villain who's sitting in our... in the seat where our legitimate king should be. He's the Denethor of the Labour Party, sure, but that wasn't what Andy Burnham said. No, I'm going to make it for us. I've got a positive... this party's going to be for us now, and that's literally Restore Britain's message, a country for us. That's the winning message. And Farage still has this negative, oh, no, it's someone else's fault. It's someone else's fault. It's Labour's fault. It's Burnham's fault for stealing my slogan. No. It's your fault for being negative, right? You're just entitled. You think it's my time. Therefore, I can just say, vote to keep Burnham out. Vote to keep Starmer out. It's like, no.
And you can see what the negativity has done to the man. You go back 2 years, and the average clip you saw of Farage was him beaming, smiling, had a pint in his hand. He was so positive. Yep. It was so much outgoing energy. And it was like, it was so easy to support him at the time because he felt like a winner. And he felt to himself like a winner. And ever since he got rid of Rupert Lowe for the crimes of saying we need a comeuppance for the rape gangs, ever since then it's just been negativity and backfoot and reacting.
But it's because Farage isn't really the true leader of the right, and that's the problem. Andy Burnham has, because Farage is a poison chalice. He's been this way his whole career, from Kilroy Silk through to Rupert Lowe. All of the people
We used to have a guy on staff that had been backstabbed.
Yeah, Stephen Wolfe. Yeah, he'd been backstabbed and polluted, his reputation polluted by Farage over nothing. You know, got punched in the face and knocked out in the bloody European Parliament.
Because he started to get too popular. It's happened time and time and time again.
And so Farage, he is just not the true king of the right. That's his problem. No. In the way that Trump is the true king of the right in America, or Andy Burnham is the true king of the Labour Party on the left, Farage is just not that guy.
He's the Joffrey Baratheon. He's fragile and
And so his whole party takes on this weird negative aspect. Why would you reform? This is a reform councillor campaigning in Makerfield. I would rather vote for Jimmy Savile.
I already know why I'm not going to vote Labour. Yeah. Tell me why I should vote Reform.
Yeah, I'm not voting for the person who preferred Jimmy Savile than Andy Burnham. I would actually rather vote for Andy Burnham. Like, call me crazy, but I'd rather Andy Burnham than Jimmy Savile. Like, sorry, why do I have to have this conversation? Like, why are you putting Jimmy Savile in this conversation? It's really, really weird. And then you've got this weird sort of, like, taking credit for ousting Keir Starmer. And it's just like, you know...
Yeah, that's like, a stretch.
The fourth Prime Minister, Nigel Farage, was forced out of office. It wasn't Farage who did
it. It was Labour backbenchers who got rid of Starmer.
Yeah, exactly. It was the people of Makerfield on their heroic journey being like, no, we're going to recapture our party for us, just like Rupert Lowe is trying to do. And so, obviously, it's devolved into infighting. Zia Yusuf, just to be clear...
Going after him now.
He's my favourite person in Reform.
Yeah.
He's got me blocked on Twitter, you know, like, he doesn't listen to me.
And things you... No, Zia Yusuf is filling an important role in...
He's the right of the party.
Yes, because... Farage has got this boomer mentality, and my own mother said this to me not so long ago. I met up with my mother for a barbecue, and she was saying, I quite like Kemi because she can say what we can't say. And I said, well, what do you mean that she can say what we can't say? And it was like, well, because she's not white, she can say these things. And I was like, no, you could, we can all say whatever the hell we want to say, right? We don't need to let an ethnic minority represent our positions, because we're boxed in by this 30 years of programming. And I know the boomers, they got it so hard. But Farage is in that. He will never say the things Zia Yusuf is saying. So Zia Yusuf is being there, I'm allowed to say this because I'm brown character. Now, I don't object to Zia Yusuf saying that. What I object to is that there isn't every native Briton in Reform isn't saying the same things.
Well, he literally kicked you out, he kicked Bo out, he kicked Rupert Lowe out.
But for basically,
saying the things that Zia Yusuf is saying.
Yes.
And now even Zia Yusuf is in trouble of this.
Yes.
Right. And so Nigel's instincts...
Zia Yusuf is starting to become too white-coded, so he's got to go for saying
yeah, this. That's literally where it's come to. And he's become the right-wing nativist in Reform, and Farage just, for some reason, just hates the right. And it's like, okay,
yeah,
you can't be the king of the right then. When you say, like, what do you want? We want someone who's genuinely a believer.
Oh, his whole career is... He thinks himself as the bookend.
Yes.
You know, this is the political spectrum, and I am the right-wing bookend, and at me it stops. And if there's anything to the right of me, well, that's obviously just falling off the shelf. That's a no. That can't happen.
Yeah. I mean, I like I said, I don't dislike Zia Yusuf at this point. I've seen more than enough of him to actually get a measure of the man. You know, if you're going to associate with Farage, you're a bit seedy, maybe you're a bit verse, you know... You've always got that kind of stench on you. But he seems to actually get why people are angry with Farage and the system.
Yes.
And see Farage as part of the system. And that's why he's tacking to the right. Because, like, the problem that Farage has, he can never be the sincere right-winger in the room. Andy Burnham can be the sincere old Labour guy.
That's a good point. Right?
Rupert Lowe can be the sincere patrician right-wing grandfather who's like, No, I'm not having this.
And I tell you what you're saying, they're both extremely credible in their role. Nobody, even the people who don't agree with him, even the people like me who would never, ever, ever vote Labour, looks at Andy Burnham and says, you fit. I understand why you are there. Likewise with Rupert Lowe, even the people on the left, they say, yeah, I understand why you were there.
No, this is totally true, because I've been speaking to a bunch of left-wing commentators who are like, they're outside of the centrist consensus, right? And so actually we find ourselves, I agree that nationalising the railways is a good idea for different reasons to you, but we agree on the same thing. And they don't mind Rupert Lowe for exactly this reason. He's sincere, he fits, he's authentic.
Yes.
I hate Farage. And this is why I think...
And I hate Starmer. Yeah. Well, actually, everybody hates Farage. Well, not everybody hates Farage, but...
A lot of people do.
Yeah, but the left hates Farage and all the right hates Starmer. But Andy Burnham is maybe you're right. Maybe a tragic figure is more the course that he's on than a hated figure.
I don't think he'll be hated like the way that these guys are. But anyway, yeah, so I genuinely think this is the story that is being played out in Makerfield. I think that's why Farage can't understand it. He doesn't understand why he lost. He doesn't understand why he's losing the right. And he doesn't understand why Rupert Lowe got 7% from a standing start.
Well, and that was the frustration at the end of his video. He was literally saying, what do you want from me?
Yes.
He doesn't get it. I mean, the hundreds of hours that this channel alone has produced explaining in great detail
what it is
we want, why we don't like Reform money, why we were, absolute support. We had him on the bloody video wall. You know,
you were a candidate for him.
I was a bloody candidate. Yes, exactly. I mean, he doesn't get why we're unhappy.
Yeah. And so basically, Nigel, just to round all of this off. What we want is for you to retire. We just want you to retire and let someone who is authentically right-wing and comfortable in their own skin, being the right-wing patriot in the country, to take over.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here. And if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.